Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Gardening today. Oh, perfect day. We had a little rain. Most places did anyway yesterday. Today it's beautiful. Great day to talk digging in the dirt with Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. You got a gardening question? Call 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Usually a popular show, so call early and prepare to wait. You can also email voxpop at wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gardening. What could be better? Well, I'll let you ponder that during the news, and we'll be back. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back. They're ready to take your calls. This is an exciting time of year. It's fun to get out there and dig, or so they tell me. Bob Graves is a co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Dale Isla Riggs is the purveyor of fine, oh, she brought melons today. She's the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York, don't you know? If you have a gardening question, call 800-348-2551. Do it soon, before the lines are loaded. 800-348-2551. You can email us as well. Voxpop at wamc.org. Fred Breglia, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having us today, right?
Yeah, you got it. How are the things at the Landis?
Well, we finished up our 5K. It went really well. We had over 150 runners this year. And, you know, there was probably, I would say the trails were probably in some of the best shape because it's just been so dry. And usually we're a pretty muddy race. But this year the trails were able to be mowed and we were able to get the trails all taken care of. So one of the best trails for the 5K.
Okay,
too.
So that was going to be my question. And I know that you've invited me to the Landis Arboretum for about 15 years. And I have not gone yet.
It's going to happen yet.
I don't get out of the house. But I was going to say, you don't have paved trails. These are dirt and...
Correct. We have, it's funny you should say that. So we are planning for a paved trail, for a handicapped accessible paved trail coming up this fall, actually. It's going to be installed.
So the whole thing?
Nope, just a section, for those folks that have a little bit harder time getting out and enjoying the Arboretum. We're going to be able to offer that for the future. It'll be a paved loop, and it'll have a lot of plantings on it, and we're even going to add some signage on there that'll probably have Braille, so people can, sight-limited folks can still, read it, and plants that have a lot of fragrances or touch, so you can smell it, get up close and smell the plants and things like that.
Interesting.
So most of it is grassy trails, and then we have some dirt trails, and then we have basically a trail for everyone, everything from easy, real easy trails to pretty moderately difficult trails.
But when you do the run, the 5K, it's over the grassy trails?
Grass and rooty and rocky.
Oh,
it goes through the old growth forest.
Are there injuries?
Not usually too many.
Okay.
There was a few bee stings this year.
Yeah.
A couple of people. We did give a few bee sting awards for the folks that got hit.
Really?
My son Mikey was also one of them, so he got one of the toughest finisher awards this year.
Oh, good. Well, as long as people bring their EpiPens, they're good to go.
Yeah, luckily nobody was allergic,
good.
So that went well. And we're gearing up for our spring or our fall plant sale coming up in a couple of weeks, which is hard to believe.
Now,
we're talking fall. The 6th and 7th of September, Saturday and Sunday, coming up. So hard to believe we went from a 5K right to fall sale. And I can't even believe I'm saying fall sale
on
the air today.
Don't say that word yet. To Dale Isla Riggs, how are things at the Berry Patch?
Things are great. It's a fantastic melon year, and I am seeing melons in my sleep right now.
Oh my gosh. You brought some beauties.
Every single day.
Oh, it smells beautiful in here.
It does. I love this. And so we'll talk about those in a moment, right after we say hello to Bob Graves from Fatigan's. How are things over at Fatigan's?
Hey, things are great. Weather cooled off, and we got a little rain, and it feels like fall is coming.
The last 2 days felt great. Today feels a little bit warmer. I don't know.
But it's nice to at least be reminded that it's not always 85 or 90 degrees.
It is. It's been a tough, dry summer for us.
Tough
season.
And I would remind folks that even though we had a little bit of rain, stuff is still dry.
Oh, gosh.
If you're planting things new now, shrubs or perennials, make sure you water them.
Let me tell you what's not dry. I-88. I had to drive home last night from Oneonta.
Oh,
boy.
And then there's right in the middle of it.
It's about, you know, that road is perpetually under construction.
It certainly is.
And so, you know, for 12 miles, yeah. It's down to one lane, and there's some nitwit in a Prius doing 40. And there's a line of us back there in the rain. It was fun. But anyway, I digress. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's gardening today. All right, Dale Island, before we get to the phones and the emails, what did you done brung?
I brought just a smattering of all the different melons that we have. I brought a Christmas melon, which Ooh. Is known as Piel de Sapo.
Now, why do they call it? Does it bloom or does it come to fruition in Christmas time?
So it's a Spanish melon, and what they do in Spain is they actually harvest them at the end of October to eat as a special treat on Christmas Day.
Ah, cool.
So it's a long storage melon, just gets sweeter with time.
How do you store them?
Just in a cool spot.
Yeah,
but
not
they're great to eat right now. Now, also,
that's unusual for a melon to have that kind of lifespan.
Yes, yeah. Very, very unusual. Yeah. Usually, you figure it's days.
Yeah,
weeks.
Yeah, that's great.
So the Christmas melon is there. It looks beautiful. Nice
yeah.
light color to the meat.
Yes, creamy colored. Texture is you can eat it at different stages. Sometimes you can eat it at a crispy stage, or you can let it get softer and eat it at a softer stage,
but so this is pretty
it's
firm.
Still good.
Yeah,
no matter what.
All right, what else there?
And then I have two different standard cantaloupe varieties. One is called Sugar Rush, which is a medium-sized one and well-named with the sugar content. And then one called Sugar Cube. I say it's the little sister to Sugar
Rush.
Yeah, it's
a little softball-sized one.
Yeah, it is. It's perfect for one or two people and super sweet. And then one of the three different types of Tuscan melons that we brought that taste like a cantaloupe but have a firmer texture.
Okay, while you were talking, I had a bite of the Christmas melon. It's not that sweet.
No, but you also said it's crispy.
Yeah.
So if you let it get softer.
It gets sweeter.
It gets sweeter. But some people don't want super sweet melons. And I had a customer week, actually, that she was worried about the melons being too sweet because she was diabetic and wanted something with good flavor and texture but wouldn't have too high a sugar content.
Aha. All right. Yeah. Hey, Bob, you want to share that with Dale Island and Fred? He's just going to town, man. All right, the number here is 800-348-2551. A couple emails came in way early. This one came in at 9:49 a.m., I'll go with the one that came in yesterday. This is from Anthony in South Hadley. Is it safe to use an herbicide like Roundup to control runners from an established planting? I don't want to kill the main plant, just control the runners.
No.
Yeah, I would not do that.
Absolutely not. You will
kill
the whole plant.
Yeah.
Cut them, pull them, but don't.
Exactly. If you spray the runner, it's gonna systemically take it out to the plant.
Okay.
Yeah, the material translocates is the whole point of that product. It moves from the leaves to the roots.
Yep, if you see exposed roots of a tree and you spray the roots, you're going to get it right into the tree. Same kind of concept.
You know, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of stuff on the internet, which, as you know, is always accurate, about Roundup. And I'm scared to death of the stuff. I won't use it. And I'm sure that it's science, you know. The lawyers from Roundup would tell me that I'm wrong, but that's fine. This is just my choice. I found this one that I saw advertised. Oh, it's, I don't even know what it is. It's okay for plants and invertebrates, but you can spray it on grass and weeds. And the stuff works. I forget the name of this.
Yeah, it's probably like a citrus-based type of
It smelled
product.
A little of yeah. like yeah. citrus.
Yep. Those actually, they don't translocate, so sometimes the stuff will come back.
It
but
might.
They do knock it down.
It yeah, they does. Sure do.
Yep,
yeah.
And we use type of product like that sometimes, as we need to, like for driveways. It's called Burnout, the one we use.
I don't know if that was what I had.
Right, but there's other
on
ones
the driveway
like that.
Yep, and it just, and the walk.
It foliar burns them out, and then like Bob said, sometimes, because it's not getting sucked down into the roots, so if it had enough stored energy in those root systems, they could put out another flush. But, hey, go back out and hit it again.
It's just like you say with a lot of things we're trying to get rid of, if you keep cutting it.
Exactly.
But with this sort of thing, if you keep spraying it when it comes back, you eventually you exhaust that root system.
Yep, and they're not, like you say, bad for invertebrates. Yeah. They're not bad for critters or animals. It's like, you know, you still can control weeds without all the nasty chemicals.
I kind of like the smell, too. It's kind of fun.
That's right.
That was my extent of my gardening work for the year.
There we go. Not bad.
Impressed.
Not bad.
Thank you. Impressed. You got outside.
I did for a few moments at night. Ann writes, I have a couple of favorite daylilies that are going to seed. I looked up how to grow them from seed, and no, I have to freeze them, but for how long? All winter, then plant them up, or can I sow them before the ground freezes? And that's from Ann.
So, you know, every seed is a little bit different. Every plant's a little bit different. They all require a different type of, you know, scarification process to get them to germinate. And for something like that, I'd have to be, you know, I'd have to look that up.
I would always just go to propagating this particular plant, Google it, and they'll tell you even the number of weeks of cold weather and temperature that
temperature.
It has to have.
Yeah, the temperature exactly, and how long you need to keep it at that temperature. And, you know, I always say when you do Google things, because the internet, of course, is always accurate.
Yeah, exactly.
That means you should get replication. So if you Google that and you find a few different sites, hey, I got four or five sites saying the same thing, that's a better indicator that you're probably on the right.
I have Googled things and got entirely the opposite answer. You get one answer and then you get another one that's completely different for the same question.
Exactly.
I love when it generates the AI response because it's like spinning a roulette wheel.
Yeah, but if you go to those EDU extensions, you know, any universities are always going to be, you know, pretty trustworthy.
Now, the other thing with the daylilies is they're awfully easy to divide. Pick them up and take a section of it and move them that way. Then you don't have to worry about germinating. She's probably doing it for fun.
I'm thinking for fun. I was going to say the same thing. They divide so well that, you know, generally anytime we want to, you know, propagate daylilies, we do divisions and move them
sometimes
around.
Sometimes it's good for them because they get kind of crowded.
That's true.
We're going to take a break here, and I'm going to try some more melon. 800-348-2551. We go to the phones right after this. We'll be talking with our mouths full, but we'll let you talk. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Bush Bash, there's the marquees, and I have no idea what the title means. Just, it is what it is. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gardening today, we have Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Well, we had another melon, and this one was one of the, this was one of the fatties.
Sugar Rush.
Sugar Rush. Nice. Not that sweet, though.
I think your taste buds are off today.
That's two for two, he says. They're not sweet.
Well, I was taking the air before the show, so it's quite possible. Let's go to the phones. We'll try some more later. Steven is in Saugerty. Steven.
Yes, how you doing, guys?
Welcome.
I have a question on butterfly bushes. I'll give you a quick rundown. About 4 years ago, I planted about 8 or 9 different varieties in a U-shape around the pool. 2 years ago, somebody told me you need to cut them in March. I cut the majority of them back, and none of them really came back good at all. And the style that have like a wood barky stalk, I let go long. And they seem to be doing better, but they're not getting very huge either. I'm just trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong and if it matters on the variety and when should I cut them and how do I get them big.
Butterfly bushes are a little marginal in this area hardiness-wise. They get hurt in the winter. They're often like a perennial in that they'll die back to the ground. And the varieties are really different. I don't think it's so much when you trim them. It's what a particular winter does. And like this past winter, they got hurt. The winter before, not so bad because it wasn't nearly as cold.
That's correct, yeah.
I think it has more to do with the weather than with when you trim them. But they sometimes come up right from the ground, from the roots, like a perennial.
Yeah, and ours did this year at the Arboretum. Yep. We had a bunch of them. Last year, they didn't die back
at all. They didn't die back.
So I always wait to see in, you know, spring. And then, you know, March is not a bad time. I scratch the bark, and if they're green, then I don't cut them down below that. I leave them where they are. But this year, this past winter, it knocked them right back to the ground. But they'll come right back up. I mean, our butterfly bushes are in bloom, and they're like, you know, 4.5 feet tall right now. I will ask you, though, if you said you have them around a pool. Is it like in a retaining wall type of thing? or in the ground, or?
No, I have a tractor supply style 6 foot animal pool. I made into a little dip pool, and I just placed them around it. It's not like a retaining wall.
Okay.
I'm just surprised. Everybody's butterfly bushes seem to be doing great. They just not growing tall or doing great.
Microclimate.
I'm afraid to do anything with them, I'm telling you.
Microclimate makes a huge difference on those. I mean, you might be able to grow them on one side of a building and not on the other side of the building. They're really sensitive to winter. Now, you have to remember that this past winter was 20 degrees colder in its minimum temperature than the winter before.
Yep.
It was much colder this past winter than the one before.
Yeah, so I suspect that's, you nailed it. I think it's just winter. It just the winter kind of set them back. And like certain varieties, like Bob said, it's, certain ones are a little bit more marginal. The classic butterfly bush is a little bit tougher. None of them are super tough in our zone around here. Down in Long Island, you never got to cut them back. They'll get 6-7 feet tall.
In some places, they're even invasive. They'll get away from you, but not here. It's
not
too
here.
Cold.
Stephen, thanks for the call. It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Let's go to Woodstock. It's Catherine's turn. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. Can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay, thank you. I have two sort of related questions. I had lilac bushes that came with our house. They're probably about 30 years old. And between the icy winter and then all the rain and then the drought, they're just covered with sort of rusty fungus. And I realize I have to sort of get rid of them. I'm going to have them taken out. And I want to replace them with something probably in the spring. I want something that's hardy and beautiful and maybe blooms more than the lilacs, like a longer blooming season. And that is hopefully deer resistant. And I was thinking of hydrangea bushes, or if you have any other thoughts.
First I would say the first plant that I thought to replace them with would be a hydrangea. That's a good one. But before you take them out, this year and last year too, we've had a lot of fungal problems on lilacs. And in general, most of those will come back. And it doesn't mean you're going to get that fungus on those leaves and make it look unsightly like this time of year. Every year, some years, the condition just doesn't favor that fungus and the plants are going to be fine. So before you take them out, probably I would urge you to say if you really want them out, fine, but otherwise they'll probably come back.
It would be easier to go through and trim out the oldest growth in the lilac to encourage them to rejuvenate themselves. So again, they look dead, some of them now, but they're not.
And
the only thing I'd caution you with when you mention hydrangeas is the deer do eat them. They didn't used to, but they do now, particularly macrophyllas, paniculatas. They've eaten mine as high as they can reach.
Rats.
You just don't know. Somebody asked me what's deer resistant, and I say nothing.
depending on the year, it really is true. I've
seen them eat things that the books say they don't eat.
I've seen them eat Colorado blue spruce.
Yeah.
Spiky Colorados, they don't usually do that. But if you haven't pruned your lilacs and you have these really tall, big cane lilacs.
Go ahead, Catherine.
I had them pruned in the spring, pretty much.
Okay.
But they just look, the one in particular just looks dead. I mean, there's no leaves left on it. They're probably about 30 years old, and I'm just, I think I sort of made the emotional decision to just get rid of them.
Dale Isla.
Yeah. They might look dead, but if you should scratch the bark, and if it's green underneath the bark, they're actually still alive.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Catherine, thanks a lot. All right, Dale Isla. The third round of melons, exquisite. What are we having there? They're not that sweet, but they're good.
That was another sugar rush.
I'm kidding. These are very sweet. I love the flavor on these. It's almost got a tropical kind of mango-y taste to it.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that before.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah. I was
really good.
Same thing.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a winner for sure.
Boy, I think if I was Dale Isla, I wouldn't be eating anything else right now, but melons.
Well, you're coming close, except we did have a peach, raspberry, blackberry pie last night.
Oh,
I mean, you can't really go wrong.
We're going to have your suggestion, peach blueberry. We're going to have that one.
I think you take these melons and you make a gold cake layer with some homemade whipped cream, and then you do like an upside down.
Sounds good.
You know what I mean?
Ooh.
I've got a lot of good ideas today, Bob, right?
Ooh.
I'm on my A game, right?
Cantaloupe shortcake.
I'm not fading into retirement, right? let's go to John in Stone Ridge. John, go ahead.
Hey, Ray. Love Vox Pop.
Hey,
hello, gardeners.
Hello.
I'll try to be quick here. I put in 3 plum trees and a pear tree this year. They're all about 6 feet tall. They're all doing real well. I put them in a couple of months ago. I wanted to know, I live up on a ridge, and it gets windy, and it does get cold. And I'm wondering, should I burlap these things in the winter? Will that help them the first year?
I would definitely on the plum. I'd wrap it up with some burlap. The pear should be okay. I mean, it doesn't hurt. One more tree to wrap it. But plums are a little, any stone fruits, plums, cherries, peaches, nectarines, in this climate, they're a little shaky, particularly up high where it's a little colder and windy.
Yeah, especially since you just installed them, too. They haven't had a chance to really acclimate. So once, you know, they've been there like maybe three or four years, they've now, you know, grown accustomed to the site, and they're probably going to need a little bit less protection. Mm. But new trees haven't been there, you know, through the winter yet. I'd say it's probably a good idea.
The stresses on a plant are cumulative. So a new tree has a limited root system. It has a limited amount of area to bring up water, and they do lose water in the wintertime. So anything you can do to protect them, because you just don't know what the winter's going to.
And I would make sure that you put some vole guards around them.
Oh, boy.
The voles have been really active the last few winters, so you'll want to use some really fine mesh hardware cloth underneath that burlap to protect them from the voles through the winter.
Bark.
Okay, yep. John, thank you. Now, regarding voles and other critters that annoy me, will foxes eat them?
Oh, sure.
There's one
in our neighborhood who runs around. He's a handsome brute.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of foxes, and there seems to be just as many voles as there were. But...
And a lot of rabbits.
Oh, a lot of rabbits.
Well, since I've seen the fox, there haven't been quite so many rabbits around.
Rabbits are a little easier to catch.
Yeah.
Coyotes also will decimate voles. They eat an incredible amount of voles.
And bobcats.
If I start seeing
coyotes and bobcats in my backyard,
I wouldn't rule out that you've got coyotes in the neighborhood. Coyotes live in unbelievable spots. They're very adaptable.
Really?
Wolf, you think of as the ultimate predator, but wolf needs a lot of land, whereas coyotes are adaptable. So
but no grizzly bears, right, to
no,
be honest?
No,
just black bears.
They're friendly, right?
It's not always the strongest that survive. It's the most adaptable that survive.
All right, let's go to Carl in East Greenbush. Hello, Carl. How you doing?
Hello. Just great.
You're on.
Is it okay the way we got it set up?
I don't know. What do you got set up?
I plugged you into my dashboard.
Ah.
I have purchased in a, 5-gallon pail some raspberries from one of your competitors. And I put them in the ground without scoring the roots. And I'm wondering if I should have divided them into, because there were maybe 6 or 7 raspberry plants in each one of these buckets, or not. And if I should have, can I still do it, even though, you know, I planted them 3 months ago?
Dale Isla, what do you think?
Well, what do you mean by scoring the roots?
Well, I think if you had a tree and it was in a pot that kind of gave it root boundness, you would have said to score the roots.
Gotcha. The raspberries should be fine just the way they were. I mean, they'll send out fibrous roots and spread without a problem. But so you had 5 in like a 5-gallon bucket, and you planted them all as one clump?
No, I bought 3 buckets and spread them maybe 5 feet apart.
Yeah, they should be fine. I mean,
areas of raspberry.
You could separate them. I would wait to separate them until next spring, because what most people don't realize is that raspberries are constant through the fall. They're sending their carbohydrates that the leaves produce. They actually send them down to the roots through December. So if you do it in the fall, you can actually wind up depleting the reserves in those roots.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you do it in the spring, they're all set, they're fully dormant, they're ready to go. And so I would just divide them up in the spring and let them go then.
Okay, I can wait. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dale Isla. This one is a winner. What is that?
I'm with you. That's the best one yet.
Yeah, so this is the little softball-size one called Sugar Cube.
Okay, do you have those over at the Berry Patch?
We have hundreds
of them. I'm telling you, that I could eat all day long.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my gosh, it's so good.
Get a bushel of those.
Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Greg Ward was a late scratch. Please adjust your race card. 800-348-2551. Let's see. We'll go to Madeline in Rhinebeck. Hello, Madeline. You're on.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Sure thing.
Okay. Whenever I plant flower bulbs, I wait until after they've bloomed, I wait till the leaves turn brown before I cut them off. But with alliums, man, the leaves last forever. They're huge and they're ugly. And I was thinking, can I plant other full plants around, or is it going to interfere with the allium?
No, you can plant other things around them. You have to let those leaves go so that they feed the bulb, but you can plant other things around them.
I know.
Sure. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that, you know, just give them enough room, but otherwise you're good to go. Yeah.
You don't want to shade them out. That's the only thing.
What's ugly about them, Madeline?
Well, because they take a long time to fully brown, and they're really big leaves, so they just fill up the whole area with these, you know, leaves turning brown, and there's nothing else growing.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd like to plant like plants in it, and so that it kind of disguises it. But I'm getting the feeling you're saying it can't be shaded.
I would say more on like the left, right, front, or back of them. You know, to break them up. You know, front would definitely work, and sides, but just nothing that's going to be so big or tall that it shades it out. But planting right in them, I know what you're saying, kind of disguises them. But that we wouldn't recommend putting them right in them. But right next to them or in front of them, it would be pretty easy. You know, you put something else that's looking good right now in front of them or next to them, and your eye goes right to the good-looking thing.
That's really the essence of a perennial garden is to plant many different things because they all bloom at different times.
Yep.
And so you have continuous color. But a lot of people say, I'm going to plant perennial so I don't have to do anything ever again, which is not quite the case. You still have to tend to it.
I think part of the problem is I've planted too many alliums because I like them too much, so it's going to be hard to plant the way you're suggesting. But thank you. That's very helpful.
Dig them up and give them to somebody else.
All right, yeah, you can always move them around. And I always say make a little bloom map of your garden, too. You know, what's in bloom when, just make a little sketch, and then you can kind of help. That'll help guide you in the future.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isla Riggs. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call or two more. We'll take a break, and then we'll see what's in the email bag, which, by the way, there's so many emails. We need a four-hour show, but we'll do the best we can. Let's go to our buddy Joan in Schenectady, or if you prefer, Gasnectady. Joan, you're on.
Hello, Joan of Schenectady here.
Hi.
Raymond.
Yes.
Now you're giving, baking comments with expertise regarding the melon upside down cream cake.
I'm a Renaissance man, Joan. I think you know that very well. What do you got today, kid?
Well, what I was thinking is they send you off to one on the road, and suddenly you're a cook.
Really?
For
the road. All right, go ahead.
Here's what I have for everybody today, please, for your help. I was successful getting my in-the-ground garden transitioned into a perennial or container gardens. Lots of stuff that usually dies back to the ground. I've got the roses in, ceramic terracotta pots, but most of the others are in plastic pots. How do I prepare them to save them over the winter since they're not in the ground anymore?
That's a really good question. It's very difficult to grow things in a pot outside in the weather, in this climate, in the wintertime, because the roots are going to get as cold as whatever ambient temperature is, and they're going to freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw. So the best bet is to get them into an unheated structure, a barn, a shed, a garage, someplace where they don't require any light. And you can water them a little bit, but they need to be not protected from the extremes of weather. Otherwise, depending upon how bad the winter is, they might survive if it's mild. But if it's not mild, they won't.
Yeah. Another thing you could do, which you may not want to do because it's more work and sort of counters what you're doing with a container. But you could dig a hole and drop those containers in, roses that you mentioned. You know, dig a hole and just sink the container in. That's going to insulate the roots through the winter, water it in into the fall, and then in the spring you can, pop it back out And you could fill the hole back in, and you know that would be another way to deal with, especially woody plants. It's going to probably be a little bit easier and probably a little bit better. How we overwinter most of the stuff that we sell at the fall and plant sales. Yeah. If things don't sell and we grow it, we have a little holding yard and we just dig holes and pop them in, and then in the spring pop them out. And you know we don't lose hardly any.
It healing them in.
Yep.
And even you can even heal them in above ground if you set them on the ground and then put a whole lot of soil around them.
You could do that as well.
Okay.
What happens when the ground freezes in the wintertime, of course, it freezes at 32, but when you go down a few inches, it's probably only 20, 25 degrees, and it stays that way.
Yep.
When you're above ground with a pot, it gets very, very much a variable temperature.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't buffer at all.
The other thing that some nursery...
And what about wind?
The other thing that some nursery people do is they actually lay the pots on the side and then cover them with two layers of white plastic that's anchored down.
Yep.
And that's something that's pretty easy to do as well. And that also will protect them from the drying winds.
Yeah, we actually use a white foam that we put over them.
What's the foam made of?
I don't know.
All right. We got to take a break here, but thank you. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Dale Isla Riggs. It's Fred Breglia. It's Bob Graves. It's The Gardening Show. We'll check the email bag in a moment. I believe Prestige Records there. Bernard, pretty purdy and pretty good. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop and Ray Graff with you, along with Dale Isla and Fred and Bob. A few emails here. We'll try to go as quickly as we can, although Ellen in Schenectady wrote something of a novel. Here we go. I have a good-sized flower garden in a small yard that I love, along with the birds and butterflies that visit. What I don't like are the large number of bees that buzz around, as I'm highly allergic to yellow jackets and three of their relatives. To add to the problem, my neighbor has a tree with small berries that hangs over my yard, and the berries fall over the ground. The bees swarm over these, which makes being in the backyard almost impossible during the day. I don't mind a few bees to help pollinate, but the number I have is way too much. Is there a non-toxic way to deter these pests? I'm using bee traps, which remove some, but there are still seemingly hundreds of them. I've looked for nests, but haven't found any. I know it's not a popular thought these days to remove bees, but being allergic, I don't have much of a choice. That's from Ellen in Schenectady.
I think the answer is no.
There's no easy way?
I don't know of one.
Yeah, the other thing is there's a difference between bees and wasps and yellow jackets. Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of important to figure out.
I think she knows. I mean, clearly she knows the relatives and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems like some kind of incense might
incense?
Work. You might, because it's got a smell in here. What they want, they're attracted to sweet stuff. So incense, I don't think they're going to really like. Citronella candles, they certainly don't like.
Really? Particularly that fruit falling in there is what attracts them.
Really going to pull them in, because they're after that sweet this time of year. They're not actually trying to, you know, they're not overly aggressive. They're not, in that stage, they're not overly aggressive. They're unless you get into a nest.
Some of your good pollinators aren't going to bother you.
That's what I'm saying.
It's the wasps and the hornets.
It's the yellow jackets. Yeah. Especially. So, I think Fred's idea of some incense, especially near the area where the dropped fruit is, because that is going to pull in yellow jackets
in
a big way.
No matter what.
Cool.
Yeah, you are going to have to make sure it's a safe type of incense burner. So, like an enclosed one, since it's outdoors in the wind, I would say, you know, you're looking for one of those ones that's more a little tiny, a little jug of sorts, and you drop them in, and so they're contained. Wind can blow all day long, but it lets the smell out.
Oh, okay, and get some Quicksilver Messenger service on the stereo,
one
old good old hippie time.
It's starting to sound better all the time here.
My daughters this is from Tim in the 518. My daughters gave me a Persian lime tree 5 years ago. Last year was the first year it produced its first three limes. This year, no limes. There were buds in the early season, but the buds disappeared. I've increased the size of the pot last year because it was root-bound. Gets full sun. It's in well-drained soil. I water it when the soil feels dry and provide citrus fertilizer every 6 weeks. However, the leaves are curled, but I see no sign of pests, aphids, worms, etc. Occasionally, I find a few leaves that look like they're being eaten by a caterpillar, but can't locate any. I bring it inside for the winter to protect it from the cold. In the spring, I bring it outside as it warms up during the day and bring it in at night until the weather is above freezing. Any thoughts?
Got a couple. She repotted it, and maybe it needed it, but if that pot was too big, it was staying too wet as possible. Sometimes you repot something, you know, if you go 2 inches maybe bigger, you don't want to go 6 inches bigger. You don't go from a 6-inch to a 10-inch. You go from a 6-inch to an 8-inch.
Yep.
So that's the first thing
I'd
be looking at.
How's the plant going
to
know?
Well, no, the roots stay too wet.
I see.
Nothing in that part of the media, and it just
stays
saturated.
To get dry. They don't want to be too wet. Now, in terms of the leaves being chewed, that could be a weevil. And a weevil will never see, because a weevil only comes out at night.
True.
And they chew the edge as if you took a hole punch and kind of snapped it along the edge of the leaf. And they just take bites out of it. And they will that the larva stage of that weevil will eat the roots. So a couple things could be going on.
Maybe a small chance of scale.
Could be scale if its leaves are sticky.
She said sticky, so maybe scale. And you're looking for aphids, and you're looking for other critters that are more moving. But scale, a lot of people see that, and some of them look like the color of the bark.
They look like they're part of the plant.
It looks like it's part of the plant. So I wouldn't, I'd say at least a quick check to rule that out, especially with the sticky comment.
Delilah?
I would also still look for aphids. Well, she said there aren't any in there. There's so many different species of aphids, and some of them are really tiny, and they may just be down in the buds.
Okay.
Again, that stickiness.
All right. One more email here. By the way, those.
That's a winner.
Oh, boy, those are winners. What was that?
This is the Orangina, the Tuscan melon.
I like them very much.
Yeah.
I like them. Fred, give that a shot.
All right. Wow.
This one's from Jerry, and then we'll go back to the phones. Jerry writes, "The good news is that my wife and I built ourselves a beautiful retirement home in the Southwest Adirondack Park and retired and moved into it 3 years ago. The bad news is my wife loves gardening, that's not the bad news. It's not going well. That's the bad news. Not only is it like putting out the buffet for the wildlife, she dumps hundreds of gallons of water from our well onto her garden with really poor results. Very low yield, low quality. Any suggestions would be appreciated. I'm thinking marriage counseling. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think move.
I think we could do better than that. A lot of times, right plant, right spot equals a fairly easy plant to grow. If it's just the wrong plant, it's not getting too much shade. So a lot of people think, I don't have a green thumb. But a lot of times, it's not so much that. It's just a matter of matching conditions. So, the plant likes a lot of sun, then it gets a lot of sun. If it's Adirondacks, there's a chance it's getting a lot of shade. I don't know what kind of, shade exposure you've got.
Also, you're worried about the quality of the soil in that area.
I was going to say, I think soil tests.
That's
definitely.
It could be almost sand or gravelly.
Yep.
Or
pH, as well as just basic nutrients that are in it.
Mix in a lot of organic material.
Okay.
For the wildlife, you got to fence it. It's just up there, you got to fence it.
You do. And a lot of times, Adirondacks, I see a lot of acidic soils up there.
Right.
So, as Delilah said,
there's
pH
there's
test
going on
key.
With the soil.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And it could have low fertility, but start with a pH test. That would be a really good one. Take it to a local cooperative extension or send it out depending on, what you're looking for. And a fertility test could also help.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Delilah Riggs. All right. Several people have been waiting a very long time. Let's blast through some calls here. We'll do a lightning round. Christina is in Accord. Christina, go ahead.
Hi, I've got maybe a kind of weird, crazy question about worms.
Okay.
I was thinking, wow, there's so many worms in my garden. And then my friend said, what kind of worms do you have? And I thought, are there different types of worms? But apparently there's like this weird worm that like is not an earthworm or all that. But I'm not so worried about the garden. Do you guys know anything about that invasive worm that depletes the soil, or is my friend just crazy?
No, we do know about it. It's called the jumping worms, and it's not a myth. It's a problem. They decompose material like other worms do, but they do it at a faster rate than the general worm. So it actually, general worms can sort of break it down at the same rate that it's being replenished. Those things exceed that.
So we'd recommend you Google jumping worm, get a picture of it, and make sure you know what you got.
Yep. They are easy to ID. So Cornell University's got some really great photos online. and you can ID them pretty
easily.
And they
really jump, right? I mean,
they jump around more than your average worm. Yeah.
They look a lot like an average worm, but they're different if you look at it close.
Yep. If you look at that little band on them, it's called a clotalum. That is a definitely different than all your other earthworms. And very easy to see on the Cornell website.
All right, Christina, thanks a lot. Let's go to Emily in Shelburne Falls. Emily, how are you?
I'm okay, Ray. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you got?
I have a list. Can I just rattle off my list here?
Yeah, we're running out of time, but okay.
I know. Really quick. I think you answered my raspberry question. So that's in the spring, dividing them or digging them up?
Yes.
Okay. I have a redbud pruning question, lilac, hydrangea, hostas. When do you do those?
It's all a little bit different, but redbud, I will tell you, is you got to have a pretty good reason to prune it. It's not a good compartmentalizer, which means stopping rot from spreading through stems. So with redbud, I prune as necessary, but you always want to have a reason to prune. It's not just, hey, it's spring or summer, it's time to prune it. Have a reason. Structural pruning, creating good structure. Improving fruit and flower, those are, clearances, those are all reasons. So so I would say less is more on the redbud.
The others you could do most any time. I know summer's not a bad time because they're growing, but they're not actively growing. You could probably wait till fall on things like hydrangeas too if you wanted to. They're pretty indestructible. You could do those most any time.
Yeah, but those other plants like the redbud and other trees, I would wait. You don't want to go too late into the summer. You're still okay right now, but once we get into September, which is coming up pretty quickly here, I wouldn't do too much pruning at that point. If you were shaping, structurally, reducing one side or another to make a new leader, real small cuts, easy, but not a lot of cutting at the end of summer because it stimulates late season growth, and that can be winter damaged.
Emily, because you're a living saint, I'm going to give you one more. What do you have?
Thank you so much, Ray. Is it true that one can plant your prickly pear cactus in this climate? I'm in Shelburne Falls, Mass. And somebody said you can plant them.
Yeah, you can plant prickly pear here. Yeah. It's a succulent, likes a fairly dry soil, something sunny.
Yep, but, and a little bit marginal, but it does work. Yep, especially
if it's a
real cold
spot, no, but Massachusetts, maybe.
Splendid. And can you eat prickly? Thank you, Emily. Can you eat prickly pears? Are they tasty?
You could, yeah, sure.
You know what, Bob?
they sell them in supermarkets down south.
You see them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
A little too today. Let's go to East Hampton. Ted, you're on. Ted.
Hello, how are you?
Good, welcome.
Yes, I've been having a problem on an annual basis with my cucumbers. The foliage, there's always a hole, a small hole, and it browns around the edging of the hole, and then the plant wilts. And I've been spraying it with neem oil and Captain Jack, but I haven't been successful.
Yeah, so cucumbers have a problem with cucumber beetle, which will feed on them and spread a bacterial disease that plugs up the vascular system of the plant and causes it to wilt. So if you're getting the wilt, it's most likely bacterial wilt spread by the cucumber beetle. And what I recommend that you do is you just grow them underneath row cover or exclusion netting so that the insect can't get in and feed on the plant.
Ted.
Yeah, the chemical you're using isn't going to work well because you're not hitting the insect, and all it's got to do is take a bite out of it, and it spreads that disease.
Right.
Okay. I have one last question. I have a black and blue salvia with a cleome in a ceramic pot, and annually the black and blue salvia has holes in it in the foliage, and I don't see any insects around it. Salvia is not supposed to have a problem, supposedly, with insect problems.
Well, again, that could be a weevil, because you'd never see a weevil. It'll come up and chew the leaves. But I've seen insect damage where it was pretty severe, and I never saw the insect.
Oh, interesting.
It just can happen.
They're so transient. Yeah. You have to be keeping your eye on that plant.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, Fred has trail cams. Why don't you use a trail cam, Ted?
Yeah, not the best on insects.
Yeah, we'll work on insects.
Yep, small critters, yes, but insects, unfortunately, not the best.
All right, Betty Sue writes in, Previous owners planted burning bushes in large raised bed. Been pruning appropriately. They're about 11 plus years old, but they're overshadowing everything else I plant. Can I replant them or just get rid of them?
Well, you can butcher them if you want to cut them back. I mean, I've cut those back so severely that people cried, and they come back. And you can move them if you want to.
And you could also remove them because they are an invasive on the invasive species list for New York State and other states.
They're still legal
as well
to sell, but they are on the list.
And there are better plants to put in there. So, you know, maybe a combination.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's go to Susan in Saratoga, who's been waiting, well over a half an hour. Well, that's not Susan. That's the wrong line. I apologize, Zach, the engineer. Hello, Susan. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I've been waiting, and I've enjoyed the program very much.
Thanks.
I actually have loads of questions, too, but my original one had to do with I've planted clover in my lawn. I really don't care if my lawn is all grass. I just want it to be green, and I love white clover. Because I cut back a lot of my perennials, I end up with those seeds in there and new small plants and also weeds. Is there a way that I can preserve my clover, get rid of some of the other true weeds when I'm maintaining my lawn?
Any broadleaf weed killer is going to hurt the clover. So a lot of the things you're talking about, you may just take care of by mowing. I mean, if there are perennials that are reseeding themselves, you'll mow them a few times. They're going to be gone. But a lot of the perennial weeds, that are in the lawn, no, you're not going to get rid of those without hurting the clover. So I would, they're green too. Just live with them.
Okay.
Yeah, and sometimes they're more abundant in certain areas.
Sure they are.
I hire a middle school kid or a high school kid and pay them to actually weed by hand.
If you want to violate child labor laws, you go right ahead, Susan. But thank you very much for that one. We only have about a minute left. Let's quickly go to Terry in Guilford, Connecticut. Terry, you're on.
Hi. My question has to do with dahlias that I grew this year from seed. I've been told that you can save the bulbs, like in November. You could dig them up and put them away in a refrigerator, some peat moss, and I'm wondering if I should be deadheading these dahlias that I got here.
Okay,
various colors.
Minute here, folks.
Oh yeah, go ahead and deadhead them. That'll keep them producing new blooms.
Yep.
And you can't dig them up if they're a tuberous type and store them. You got to be careful that if you put them in something like peat moss, that it's not damp. It needs to be dry.
Yep. We've had good luck just taking all the soil off them, put them in like a paper bag, and put them right down in your cold basement.
Yeah.
And that's worked really well for us over the years.
Yeah, we just put them in our unheated basement. Yep. And in a bucket full of potting mix and pull them out the next spring.
Doesn't have to be the refrigerator.
You don't need a refrigerator.
Dahlias look great in our yard this year. Wow,
awesome.
Beautiful. Or so she tells me. It's wonderful. All right, Bob, the Fadigans, how do people find it?
We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, very near the airport road.
Okay, man, you're online?
Oh, absolutely. Fadigans.com.
Dale Isla Riggs, the berry patch. By the way, the melons, are beautiful. So how do we find you?
So we're on Route 22 in Steventown, south mile and three quarters south of the traffic light. And you can find us online at theberrypatch.net.
And you're still on the honor system, right? I can just walk up and take a few things?
Today, there's a few melons out on the honor system,
but
we're open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays
and
with the whole range.
People are pretty good about it.
She's got trail cams, too.
I like it. All right, Fred, speaking of trail cams, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum.
It's at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
All right, folks, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Support comes from Woodside Hall in historic Cooperstown, offering residential and respite care in a New York State certified family-run adult home. More information at woodsidehall.net. And Food Scraps 360 Albany, a woman-owned business providing residential and commercial collection of kitchen scraps for full-circle composting in the Capital District. Foodscraps360.com for more. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dale Isla Riggs for being with us today. Greg Ward will be back next time with any luck. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leong took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. And if my calendar is correct, well, I'm going to promote it anyway. I'm pretty sure it's tomorrow. We explore farm-to-table dining with Matthew Strauss of Heirloom Cafe. I think that's the case. And Matt, if I'm wrong, well, we'll do it another time. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.